Warning. This week's episode of Deadly Serial contains discussions of rape and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Deadly Serial. I'm Lee Moffitt. With me as always as...
Laura Dedrick. Welcome.
My lovely sister.
Yeah.
We got crazy shit.
It's hard. It's a rough one. Triggers and all that.
It is particularly hard because I hate them so much.
I hate them so much too.
Even if I didn't know anything about them, and I know that that's a really horrible thing to say, but I can just tell by looking at them that they're punchable faces.
Yeah, both of them have punchable faces. And their voices, oh my God. They're really punch them right in the face. But even worse, because we now know what they did, so.
Pow right in the kisser.
This week, we are talking about the Ken and Barbie killers.
Ken and Barbie killers. They're so beautiful and rich.
Paul Kenneth Bernardo and Carla Leanne Homolka were a Canadian couple who raped several teenage girls and killed three of them. They were deemed the Ken and Barbie killers due to their good looks and wealthy background. Despite appearing to be the perfect couple, they held a dark, deadly secret. So Paul Bernardo was born on August 27th, 1964 in Ontario, Canada. His parents were Kenneth and Marilyn Bernardo. And the family was a financially stable middle-class family, but Kenneth and Marilyn's marriage was an unhappy one. In 1975, Paul's father, Kenneth Bernardo, was charged with child molestation. Being a peeping Tom, and he had also molested his own daughter, which would be Paul's sister. This didn't seem to bother Paul, and he was described to be always happy and a young boy who smiled a lot. This is just a little extra thing for us. He also had a compulsion towards making fire during his time with the Boy Scouts, which could be just, I like to make fire too, you know?
Fire's badass.
But it's one of those signs.
It's one of the trifectas.
Yeah, fire. And we'll see that the other pair of this duo is got the animal thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're just a mess. Paul's mother, Marilyn, was depressed and would often leave her family unattended for days to visit relatives. So she'd just go see her family and just leave everyone to fend for themselves. She eventually moved into the basement of the family home. So that's sad and was probably a bit of a strain on the family, I'd say.
Yeah.
So there's all that going on. And then when Paul was 16, he overheard an argument that his father wasn't actually his biological father.
Well, shit.
Yeah. As we know, that can kind of do a number.
Yes.
His mother had an affair and he was the product of that infidelity. So this really pissed Paul off and it also just disgusted him.
Mm-hmm.
He began calling his mother a slut and a whore, and she would in turn start to call him bastard.
He would refer to himself as bastard too. Took it really personally.
Yeah. I think this was a lot where the hatred toward women and really came from
Sure.
From his mom. Yeah. From the situation with his mom. During the same year, Paul's first girlfriend left him for one of his close friends. Which sucks, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
She had been sick of his controlling behavior. He burned all of the things she had given him, which is kind of a normal, 16-year-old thing to do. I mean, it's not great, but at this point, it's still kind of normal.
It is very normal.
Yeah.
It's pretty normal.
It's on the extreme side of normal, I'd say.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little borderline. So Paul was good looking and charming, and he got very good at picking up women while he was attending a school at the University of Toronto. He was able to manipulate women into being with him And only later he would, you know, humiliate them. He would beat them. He was a real piece of shit, just real young, right off the bat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Paul had started to develop dark sexual fantasies. One fantasy he had was to build a virgin farm in which he would breed girls to rape. Yeah. He fantasized about taking young girls' virginity by raping them. He enjoyed forceful anal sex and embarrassing or degrading women in public. So again, he's just a real piece of shit.
Yeah. A virgin farm. I've heard something about this in like Game of Thrones. That's about it.
God.
Yeah, there's this old guy who lives in the woods and
yes.
Yeah, he lives on the other side of the wall. It's a good show. It's a shame it ended so badly.
Yeah. I never got into it.
Yeah.
Never did. I really
you don't have
did.
To now.
I know. I'm glad I didn't
waste it. It was all for naught.
Yeah. So I've heard. Paul would date several girls at one time. He was always abusive, and he threatened to kill them if they told anyone what he did to them or how he treated them. So he was just, an abusive piece of shit. In 1986, two of his ex-girlfriends got restraining orders against him after he called them and harassed them. Good for them. I mean, who knows? That might have saved their lives. I mean,
absolutely.
So that was a good call, ladies.
Yeah. I love it when... Yeah, it works out that way.
I know.
Use your instincts,
people. Use your instincts. Don't worry about being polite to men.
No, don't worry about being polite to anybody, all right?
Yeah. Don't be polite to men who creep you out.
Life is short. You might as well just fucking say what you want to say. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, don't be polite to men who creep you out.
Don't be a dick.
No, but trust your instincts. You're right. Trust your instincts.
Absolutely.
So that's a little bit of Paul. And as gross as Paul Bernardo is, Carla Homolka is so much worse in my opinion.
Yeah, she's worse in a different way.
It's they complement each other in the most fucked up evil way possible. But for some reason, I don't know, I guess because she's a woman. So Carla Homolka was born in 1970 in Port Credit, Ontario, Canada. Her father, Carol Homolka, was a alcoholic and a traveling salesman. Carla's mother, Dorothy Seeger, worked in a hospital as a geriatric clinic worker. And Carla had two younger sisters. It was Lori and Tammy. Carla was said to be a smart child and a good student. Her father was known to be quite abusive toward his family when he would drink. Carla, her mother, and her sisters would hide in the basement during his like drunken episodes.
Yeah,
which, you know, is a bit traumatizing and dramatic, it sounds like.
Yeah,
but when he wasn't drinking, he would dote on his daughter. So it's just kind of when her parents' marriage started to fail, her father took on a mistress. Carla's mother, Dorothy, suggested they have a threesome. So that's an interesting approach to that situation.
Absolutely. That's not what I would do.
No, but she's like, the more the merrier.
A lot of people think that way, and sometimes it works.
Yeah, but I guess it did. I mean, you know, they stayed together despite the infidelity, and they were a well-respected family.
Hey.
Yeah.
Different strokes.
Different strokes. Different folks. Do your thing.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself. So this is interesting. As I said before about the animals, as a child, she once made a parachute for a pet hamster and then threw it out the window.
Okay.
So when the hamster hit the ground and died, obviously, she buried it, which is okay. She later dug it up. She was curious to see what the hamster looked like after decomposing.
Can we just chop this up to normal child curiosity?
I was thinking that too. It does not, to me, scream future serial killer or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody's done some weird... You know what I mean? I don't know.
For sure, yeah. Like, you know, I know somebody who took a goldfish out of the tank and threw it on the floor to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And it's just kid stuff like it's that. Kids, like,
yeah.
They don't know. They don't really know.
In her younger years and teens, Carla was described as stubborn and domineering. After a depressive episode, she began to cut herself and claimed to have committed suicide. Some people said that it might have been false attention seeking behavior.
Cry for help kind of thing.
Yeah. But she went from a very popular girl to like a dark phase. She was into the occult for a little bit as a teen and was fascinated by death. She wore all black. So basically she went from like the cheerleader type to the goth type. And she later developed sadistic and masochistic fantasies.
Uh-oh. It's so, yeah. Until then it sounded so cool.
Yeah, she's, you know.
She's ditching her cheerleader costume for some JNCOs and...
Whatever, yeah, whatever's going on back then.
Smoking cigarettes.
Watching Captain
King.
So despite the hamster incident in her childhood, she loved animals. She worked in a vet clinic during high school and would be hired as a full-time vet tech after graduating high school. So she's loved the animals. In 1987, Paul graduated from college and got a job as an accountant.
Accountant. Holy shit.
I said that weird. Yeah. And during this time, Paul was raping women.
Oh.
Yeah. Not so good.
No.
In May of 87, he raped two women, attempting to rape another in July. He began a series of 24 rapes/attempted rapes within a 5-year period. Most attacks taking place outside, which is really bizarre.
That is really bizarre.
Yeah.
Are they secluded areas?
No, I'll tell you all about it. It's crazy. Okay, cool. It's crazy. So I just wanted to say, like, there are a lot of victims in this case, and I'm not saying any names in this episode. Just a heads up on that. Most of these girls were underage, and it's just not something I want to say. But all the information out there is online, all their names and everything, should you need to know their names. On May 4th, 1987, he raped a 24-year-old in her parents' front yard, right in their front yard, okay? So he would come behind them with a knife, whisper in their ear, I'll kill you, would rape them. On May 14th, 10 days later, he raped a 19-year-old in her parents' backyard.
That is a little bit more... understandable than the front yard.
Yeah.
How the hell you get away with that?
I don't know.
Just driving down the road and then you see a guy raping a chick with a knife.
It's insane.
I guess just keep driving.
I don't know how. One in the front yard, one in her parents' backyard. On just a couple of months later, July 17th, he did attempt to rape a young woman. He beat her, but she fought back and he fled. He wasn't able to rape her.
Cool.
A couple months after that, September 29th, he raped a 15-year-old girl. He broke into her house, jumped on her bed on top of her, threatened, put a knife to her throat, whispered in her ear, like, I'll fucking kill you, bit her ear. And he fled when her mother came in the room screaming. So he wasn't able to assault her. But get this, so another man was actually charged for that crime. He served 16 months. He was exonerated after Bernardo later admitted to the crime. So that poor guy,
hey, you know. Kudos to Bernardo.
Yeah.
For fessing up and letting that guy go. He could have just let that guy rot.
Oh, well, by that time, he had no choice but to fess up.
16 months.
Bro. 16 months. And you're in jail as an attempted child rapist. That's not a good time for you. You got a
big target on your back.
Yeah. So, how did these two wonderful people meet? Well, let's get into it. Paul and Carla met in a hotel restaurant. He was 23, she was 17. Carla was in his town to attend a pet store conference for work, which just sounds like a hell of a good time.
Oh my gosh, it's like a Petco convention.
Yeah, I guess there's like cedar shavings and
The whole thing smells of cedar shavings and dog shit.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. Sounds like a great time. There was an instant attraction between these two. There's lust at first sight. They ended up having sex that same night that they met.
Hours after meeting each other.
Mm-hmm. They were lightning in a bottle. So they actually lived, you know, a couple hours away from each other, but Paul would drive to see Carla at least twice a week, and they quickly became obsessed with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like his other girlfriends, he soon came to control Carla, telling her what to wear, what to eat, what to think. He would call her ugly and fat. Just, again, the usual douchebaggy things that abusive people do.
And she's still probably young. It's probably one of her first relationships, and she probably doesn't know any better. You know?
Well, true. But she was also different than the other women that Paul had met. She willingly submitted to him and encouraged his sexual behavior. So she was, like, down with it.
Hmm.
Yeah, they were really just quite the couple. The only thing was Paul was really pissed off when Carla revealed to him that she was not a virgin prior to being with him. You know, he has a real thing for virgins. In December of 87, Paul started to rape again. During this time, the police set up a task force to catch what they were calling the Scarborough Rapist, which was the town around where he was raping all these women.
Right.
Police were so determined to catch this guy, they would often continue to patrol after their shift was over. So they were really trying to get this guy. He was attacking all over. It's really bad times.
Canadian serial killers are few and far between.
Yeah.
But they are there.
They're there, yeah. So on May 25th, 1988, he was almost caught by a police officer. The police at this time were searching for him. They didn't know they were searching for him, but they were searching for the guy.
Right.
And the task force that the police had set up, they decided to stake out the bus stations because a couple of girls had been taken and assaulted at the bus station. An officer saw Bernardo hiding in the bushes, being real sus. So he ran after him, but Paul Bernardo was able to evade the officer, which is such a shame. I mean, a lot of lives would have been saved.
Oh, man.
Fucking dude just hiding in the bushes. And he's like, that guy's really suspicious over there.
That's why whenever you are in the police force, cardio.
Cardio. Number one.
You gotta do it.
Don't listen to me. I'm not in the police force. Cardio is not my number one. But maybe if you chase after people for a living, get on the treadmill. Get on it.
Get on it. Get on it.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so we're getting into this sentence here. On October 4th, 1988, he attacked another woman in Scarborough. She fought back, but he managed to stab her in the thigh and the buttock. But she got away. She just needed stitches. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Just a flesh wound.
Yeah. November 16th, 1988, he raped an 18-year-old in the backyard of her parents' house once again. This one is crazy. In August, he raped a 22-year-old after stalking her outside of her apartment window. He waited for her to come home so he could attack her. So he was getting really, you know, peep and Tom. On May 26, 1990, he raped a 19-year-old. This was the first woman to get a good look at Bernardo. And this was the first time he made his attack from the front. So this woman was able to describe her attacker, and a composite sketch was made.
Oh.
Yes. That was a start. And Carla, during this time, I'm saying Carla and Paul because it's much easier, again, to just say their first names than it is Bernardo and Homolka. I'm not trying to be like, Carla and Paul? Like, no. I'm just for my own, you know, whatever. That's why I'm just using their first name.
We can call them Parla.
Parla. Carla knew exactly what Paul was doing during his time as the Scarborough Rapist. One victim later claimed that Carla was there when she was raped and that she had recorded the whole event on camera. But at this time, police didn't pay any attention to the allegation.
Now, why not?
I don't know. There was a lot here. Hold on. I will explain. So there was a lot of tips. So it wasn't until May of 1990 that the police released the composite sketch of the Scarborough rapist. Not sure why it took a while, but it did. This led to a huge number of tips. So there were 16,000 tips received, and only three said that Paul Bernardo was the wanted man.
Wow.
So it like kind of got lost in the shuffle. So during this time, Paul had quit his accountant job and was smuggling cigarettes across the U.S.-Canadian border, which I didn't even know was a thing, but apparently it is or was, you know. But friends and Paul's previous girlfriends had all seen the sketch, and they knew it was him. Like, there was no doubt in their mind. Unfortunately, like I said, their tips were lost in the shuffle, and police were unable to follow up on them. But in November, the detectives finally visited Paul. They took blood, hair, and saliva samples from him. He volunteered his DNA as evidence. Talk about a cocky son of a bitch.
He thinks that he can't get caught.
Yeah, he has to. And he said he understood. He's like, yeah, I do look like the guy in the sketch. He told the police that he had no problem or no previous issues with women, which that's a huge
lie.
Yeah, that's a lie. And the authorities described him as credible, cooperative, charming, and he was let go.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. This DNA from Paul would not be tested for several years due to the time period and how DNA was processed in Canada in 1990. It was just in the very early stages of, you know, at this time. And there were 700 persons of interest in the Scarborough rapist case, which is insane. Took over 100 DNA samples. And like I said, Paul's DNA would not be tested for 2 years. So getting kind of back to it, Carla's family loved Paul. They were obsessed with him. He was handsome. He was successful. He was a successful cigarette smuggler, unbeknownst to them.
Is that all he did? That was his only occupation?
Yeah.
That's how he made money?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
I want to know which way they're going. I tried to figure it out. Like, are they going from the United States to Canada? Or are they going from Canada to the United States?
They got to be going from the U.S. to Canada because we got cigarettes out the ass.
Yeah, but I mean, what if they're cheaper? And I don't know. I tried to figure out which way, if he was an importer or an exporter, and I couldn't figure it out.
Don't they have cigarettes in Canada?
Yeah, of course.
What kind of cigarettes are they?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Nicotine? Or I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't know. But that's what he was doing.
Email us at DeadlyCerialGmail. Yeah.
Tell us about your Canadian cigarettes, please.
Yes.
So yeah, his family was obsessed with him. They approved of this. Okay, so Carla's 15-year-old sister, Tammy, was especially a fan of Paul. And in the same year, 1990, Paul became obsessed with Tammy. So, like I said, yeah. She's 15, Carla's sister. He tried to get Carla to allow him to have sex with Tammy. So, initially, Carla did not want Paul to have sex with her sister. You know, shocker.
That's
there.
Good. I'm yeah. surprised. Yeah. Because of, geez.
He would, however, make Carla dress up as Tammy and pretend to be her during sex. So that's really gross.
That's really bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Carla would also leave windows open and even broke Tammy's shade so Paul could peep in on her and masturbate outside of her window.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like, just like his dad, he is a peeping Tom. Not only did that happen, but Carla would assist in this physical act while Paul watched Tammy through the window without her knowledge. So she was right there with him during this whole time.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This is why I just hate Carla so much more for some reason.
They're so sick.
They're disgusting. Paul came up with a plan to rape Tammy with the help of Carla. Carla was to make sure that Tammy stayed a virgin for Paul, something again that he was obsessed with.
I wonder how she did that.
I don't know. That guy's no good for you. Stay away from him. Or I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even know. That. Yeah. On July 24th, during a summer trip with the family, Carla laced her sister Tammy's food with Valium that she had stolen from work, which is a vet clinic, remember?
They got Valium at vets?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. We've had a dog that was on Prozac, so I'm sure they have it for like either sedation or... So she gave her the Valium. Tammy did pass out, but she woke up after like only a couple minutes of being unconscious. So Paul was not able to rape her during this time. He kind of left the situation and they told her, oh, you know, you had passed out. It's okay. You're fine. Something happened. You passed out. And she's like, okay, I guess. So around Christmas time of that year, Paul was with Carla's family. They celebrated the holiday with a big family meal at the Homolka house, and Paul filmed most of the festivities with his beloved video camera. The second attempt at raping Tammy took place on December 23rd after the Christmas dinner at her parents' house. Carla said she wanted to gift Tammy's virginity to Paul for Christmas. While the rest of Carla's family slept upstairs, Paul and Carla invited Tammy down to the furnished basement to watch a movie with them. And I'm sure she was excited to have been invited to do that with them as her big sister and her big sister's cool boyfriend.
It's exciting. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. And they offered her rum and eggnog. So she's like, yay.
Mm-hmm.
But Carla had spiked Tammy's drink with the anesthesia medication halothane, which she had also stolen from the vet clinic. So halothane was used in anesthesia. It's been replaced mostly now because this was in like 1990. But it was taken from the vet clinic. This was a dosage meant for animals. It's not like Carla used the appropriate amount of drug for Tammy.
Right.
It's for animals. So I just want to make that clear. She just was like, here, we'll just give her this stuff. Once Tammy had passed out, they undressed her and Paul Bernardo raped her while Carla watched. Not only
did Carla watch.
Yeah.
She filmed it all on Paul's video camera. The tape literally goes from Christmas right into the rape.
How jarring. During this time, if Tammy would start to stir, Carla would hold a rag soaked in halothane over her mouth and, you know, her face. Working with this drug in her line of work at the vet, I'm sure she was aware that what halothane does to the skin. More on that later.
Okay.
The entire rape was filmed. After Paul raped Tammy, it was Carla's turn. Carla raped her own little sister and Paul filmed it. This happened several times. It's all on video. They each took multiple turns. Tammy began to vomit and aspirated. Instead of trying to help, the couple dressed her, put her in a room, and then called 911. Tammy choked on her own vomit while the couple watched. They did not intervene.
Just watched her die.
Yeah. Even though Tammy had a terrible chemical burn on her face from the halothane, I did look at the autopsy photos of her face, and the chemical burn is huge and awful. And it's just hazardous. Is it really? It is. It's a dark spot on the whole half of her face and towards her lips. So even though she had that chemical burn, they ruled it an accident initially.
Because he said that she got it from a rug burn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they believed that.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. They said that she drank too much, passed out, and that the chemical burn, the chemical burn was him dragging her across the carpet to her bed because she was drunk. And they're like, okay.
Yeah, totally cool. Understandable. Yeah, we understand.
Sure. I mean, it is just her whole face. It's terrible. At the funeral of Tammy, Paul was seen stroking her hair as she laid in her open casket.
That's so
it's really bad. In 1993, after they exhumed Tammy's body, It was found that the couple had placed a photo of themselves in her casket.
Whoa.
So when, well, I mean, I don't know who put it in there, I guess, but when they exhumed her body, there was a picture of the two of them in her casket.
Is that just like a fuck you or like a I'm sorry or?
I have no idea.
That's
probably, really probably a we'll always be with you. Because with these two, I could see it being that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So after Tammy's death, the two, you know, they fake grief. But during this time, while her parents are absolutely devastated over losing their daughter,
yeah,
Carla is pressuring them to go ahead and go through with her wedding because it's all about her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's a real bitch. So she's nasty. In a letter to her friend, she complained about her family still grieving her sister after a month. So in the letter, she says, fuck my parents. They are being so stupid. Only thinking of themselves. My father doesn't even want us to have a wedding anymore. He wants us to go to City Hall. Fuck that. And it just goes on and on like that. Just selfish, psycho shit.
If you really love each other, you would go to the courthouse.
Yeah.
Fuck weddings.
I agree.
And fuck traditions. They're an idiot thing.
One of the best decisions I've ever made in my life was to not have a wedding.
Me too.
Yeah, hands down.
Yeah, it was a good one. It's a good decision.
Yeah, for sure.
Courthouse is the way to go.
I love it. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
But her wedding went ahead as planned. They went ahead and did her wedding, even though they had just lost their other daughter.
It's so gross. This whole thing just pisses me off.
It pisses me off. I want to punch them, and I also need a shower. So it's like...
Yeah.
It's just all bad. 3 weeks after Tammy's death. Okay, so this 3 weeks after Tammy's death, Paul and Carla made a video that is now known as the Fireside Chat.
The Fireside Chat.
Yeah. This video was used in court evidence. On the video, the two are engaging in sex acts and talking about Tammy.
Ooh.
Now, I have read this entire transcript of this fucked up shit, and it is rough. Again, a simple Google search will pull it up if you're interested, but I will just paraphrase for you. At one point on the tape, Tammy says, I didn't give you my virginity, so I gave you Tammy's instead. I loved you enough to do that. She wants to have 4 kids with him so he can rape them all, saying she wants to help him rape a young virgin every week. And it's just like... It goes on and on of her talk, like that's their dirty talk, I guess, and it's just really nasty. And so then the tape shows the inside of Tammy's bedroom. Paul is taking a video of Tammy's pictures, and he's like, there's my baby, and he's like zooming in on her pictures. Then Carla comes in on screen. She's dressed in Tammy's clothes and using Tammy's voice, and then the two of them have sex on Tammy's bed while they film the whole thing.
Wow.
I feel terrible saying this stuff.
Dude, I know. It's last week so I felt bad.
Hard.
It is hard.
Oh, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I feel dirty. You know? I know
you need a shower afterwards.
I will have to after this.
I understand completely.
Ugh. So they started to use Carla to lure young women, girls, to them. And on July 7th, 1991, Carla invited a former co-worker out for a girls' night. She was 15. They shopped and had dinner, and then Carla invited the young girl back to her house to hang out. And I'm sure the girl thought probably nothing about it. She's another girl, so I'm sure she felt safe going back to Carla's house. That's how they got them in.
I know, but having that second person to fish for you.
Yeah.
That's what's really scary, because like you can trust someone who trusts someone you can't trust.
Yeah. Yeah. Later at Carla's house, she once again drugged the young girl with the anesthesia drug halothane. I don't know why they used it again. I guess they don't really care what happens to them, you know?
Yeah.
And when she was passed out, she called Paul and told him she had a gift for him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Once Paul was there, they undressed the girl. Paul videotaped Carla raping the girl, and then he raped the girl. The whole thing, once again, is on video. I mean, it's just so narcissistic and cocky. Like, these two are just absolutely disgusting. They don't think they're ever going to get caught. I just, the way they behave is just beyond me.
It's very American Psycho.
It is. Yeah. But he was more likable.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. this girl was allowed to live. She woke up in the next morning. She was ill and vomiting when she woke up from the halothane. But yeah. She brushed, you know, she's like, oh, they told her that she had drank and they'd had a good time. She'd never drank before, so she thought it was just a hangover. So she left without thinking anything had happened to her.
Wow.
Yeah. Carla invited her back over again, and they repeated everything they had done. But this time she stopped breathing. They were able to revive her. They did call an ambulance. So she stopped breathing. They called the ambulance. They were able to revive her. And Carla called 911 again, told them everything was okay. So the ambulance never showed up and no investigation was done or anything, which I think is super weird.
Oh my God. No. If someone stops breathing, you have to check and confirm that they've continued to breathe.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. I mean, you don't just be like, oh, well, never mind.
Who controls this shit?
I don't know. I don't know. I just thought that was insane. I was like, what the heck? Like, you'd think you'd want to follow up in that just in case.
Oh, that's good.
Good she's breathing. Let's just...
She's breathing? Oh, thank God for that. God. You had me scared.
I gotta finish my hoagie or something, you know? We've got stuff to do. Can't come save you. Eventually, this all did come out, and this particular young girl was known as Jane Doe during the trial. On June 15th, Bernardo went to Burlington to steal license plates to use in his smuggling business.
Okay, so the girl that Carla brought back, she's okay, she's alive.
She lived, yeah, she lived. Okay. She was able to, like, you know, testify. She was, yeah, Jane Doe, so she did live, and they had done that to her twice, and she almost died, but she didn't.
Jesus.
I know. So he, you know, he's stealing license plates for his whatever cigarette smuggling bullshit. And it was there that he met a 14-year-old girl. She had been at the wake for her friend that day who had passed away. She had been locked out of her house by her parents for a missing curfew. Her parents were trying to teach her a lesson.
What the fuck?
I know, but I mean, she asked Bernardo for a cigarette, and he was able to lure her into his car. Can you just imagine her poor parents? I mean, I get it, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a parent. 14 seems a little young to be like, I don't know.
I don't know. Anytime that you lock your child out of the house, you are exposing them to the elements of this world.
That is very true.
And that is dangerous. If anything, lock them inside the house.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't lock your kid anywhere.
Yeah, it's probably not the best idea.
Don't put them in a cage. You got to be careful when you got kids, man, especially when you're outside of your bubble.
Well, yeah, and there's like a Scarborough rapist raping people in front yards.
Yeah, and you got a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to blame anybody. No, no parent blaming or whatever, but I just feel bad for them because, you know, they're like, oh my God, that's completely our fault.
Yeah.
So once she was inside his car, he put a shirt over her head to blindfold her, and he drove her to Port Dalhousie, told Carla that he found a playmate for the two of them. They once again filmed themselves raping this young girl, but after her blindfold fell off, they decided they had to kill her.
Holy shit. This is a major escalation.
It really is. I mean, I feel like with Tammy, it was an accident. They obviously didn't try to help her, but I don't think they sought out to kill her.
No.
This one, they're like, well, she saw us. We got to kill her.
Yeah.
This is terrible. Because they kept her body in the basement while they had dinner with Carla's family upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Later, they dismembered her body. and encased her parts in concrete, and they threw the remains into Lake Gibson.
Jesus.
Yes.
Well, fuck.
I know. It's like, so, okay, this is even a crazier. That young girl's remains were found on June 29th. That was not long after they had abducted her. This was the same day of Bernardo and Homolka's wedding day.
What?
Yes.
The
so they found,
that they found the remains?
They found the remains the same day they got married. And the wedding video makes me want to throw up all over the place. So it's so over the top and they look so fucking happy. There's like a horse-drawn carriage and she's got that goofy ass 80s dress on. And
he's got that shitting fucking punchable. God damn, I want to knock his teeth out so bad.
Punchable fucking face. And they're just as happy as can be. Meanwhile, their victim's remains have been found on the same day. Like, but they don't care.
No,
they just don't care. On April 6th, 1992, Paul and Carla abducted a 15-year-old girl as she left her school. They grabbed her in front of a church. So they used Carla as bait again. She pretended to be lost. She was looking at a map. And when the young girl went to go help her, Bernardo grabbed her and they drove off with her in his vehicle. During a time when Paul had left to get the victim food, she pleaded with Carla to let her go or call the police. She's like, please, you know, just from woman to woman, let me go, please, please, please. And Carla's like, no.
Yeah.
So the entire time the couple kept this particular victim, they never blindfolded her. She was forced to drink copious amounts of alcohol during her captivity, as well as watch a video of the rape of their previous victim. I know.
That would be horrifying.
Absolutely. They raped this girl for 3 days before strangling her with the same cord they had used on the previous victim. And once again, the couple left her body in the basement while they had dinner with the Homolka family upstairs. Later, they cut the victim's hair and washed her body before they threw her naked body near a lake. Which is weird. I just don't know why they'd start, like, cutting hair and bathing.
Yeah, that doesn't really make... I guess wash the DNA out, but you're...
Yeah.
Bathing in even more DNA.
Yeah. Maybe they were... No, they're videotaping everything.
Yeah.
So a month later, Paul was interviewed by the police again. They considered him an unlikely suspect, even though he admitted to being interviewed previously for the Scarborough rapes. Like, he's like, hey, you know, you guys interviewed me before. Things kind of took a turn on December 27th. So Paul brutally beats Carla with a flashlight, leaving her very battered and bruised. Like, her eyes are both just completely black and just, like, swollen shut.
Beat the shit out of her.
She was back at work a few days later and told everyone that she had a car accident. But her coworkers didn't buy this. They suspected that Paul was behind the beatings. So her coworkers told Carla's parents. Because she's still a young, pretty young girl at this time. She's married, but...
Yeah.
After her parents took her to the hospital, Carla claimed to be a battered spouse and ended up filing charges against Paul. He was briefly arrested for this assault, but, you know.
Small potatoes.
The police had Bernardo's DNA for 2 years, remember?
Mm-hmm.
When he was arrested this time, they finally ended up comparing his DNA samples to the DNA that had been left behind on the victims of the Scarborough rapist. The results, Lee?
Identical.
They had caught the Scarborough rapist. And it was Paul.
It was Paul.
Spoiler, it was Paul.
Damn it.
Around this time, Carla moved to Brampton with her aunt and uncle. She told them that Paul was a Scarborough rapist and he had killed two young girls.
Just two.
Carla tried to seek full immunity from prosecution in exchange for turning on Paul. They denied that. She was given a week to accept a 12-year prison sentence or be charged right along with Paul for all three murders. They had reopened the Tammy Homolka case after all this evidence came to light. You know, they exhumed her body. That's when they found that picture. So Carla ended up taking the deal for the 12 years. She testified against Paul Bernardo in his trial in 1995. She said she was just a battered wife who went along with what Paul said to do. And she was, you know, he was manipulating her. Yeah.
She learned
yada,
from
yada.
The best.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's doing the exact same thing that he'd do.
Yeah. So after Carla had taken the plea deal, the tapes came out during Paul's trial.
Whoops.
Yep. Showing what a fucking monster Carla Homolka really was. But it, I mean, it was too late. She had already taken the deal. But prosecutors said that they, if they'd have known what was on those tapes and had known just how involved Carla was, they would have never offered her a plea.
No, she would
she
have
got
been
lucky.
Right there with them.
Yeah.
She should have been right there with
she
them.
She should have been right there. Paul Bernardo was sentenced on September 1st. He received life in prison without the possibility of parole for at least 25 years. So he was up for parole after 25 years, which is not nearly enough.
No.
He is kept in segregation in prison. Most there don't take too kindly to child killers and rapists. So they got to keep him separate. In 1999, a group of prisoners tried to get into his like segregated area, and they had to be taken out by the riot police.
Oh shit!
They really tried to get to this guy.
Wow.
Yeah, they should have just let him. I would have been totally okay with that.
I know, but yeah. No, we can't let that happen.
So Carla Homolka was released from prison in 2005. She moved to the French Caribbean for a little while, but she did get married and has three kids. Her family later returned to Canada, where they live to this day. I just can't get over the fact that she was able to reproduce, like, and have children like, three times.
Yeah, she was able to have a full life.
Yeah.
Somehow her victims didn't get it.
Yeah. She also volunteers at her kids' school in Montreal occasionally. She even supervised a kindergarten class on a field trip.
Yeah, she did.
As well as bringing her dog into the classroom for the children to pet.
Hey, now that's just fun. It's the only redeemable quality she has.
That she has a dog.
She's got a dog and she brought it to class so that everybody gets to pats.
She should not have had children. She sure as hell should not be around other people's kids. I mean, good Lord.
Absolutely not. Jesus.
The 25 years was up for Paul fairly recently, but he was denied parole. He's quoted as saying, "It devastates me what I did in the past. I cry all the time. What I did was so dreadful it hurts because I did horrible things." And all of this was said without a tear in sight. Like, fucking rot in there, Paul.
Yeah, man.
You piece of shit.
So much.
So heavy.
So did anybody figure out and find out who she is and find out who she was? And
yes. So yeah. People at the school like figured out who she was, you
okay,
know?
So she doesn't go to that school anymore, or any other schools that we know of anymore, right?
Not anymore. I mean, okay. Last I heard they were trying to get her away from the school.
Okay.
But she should just not be around. I don't think she should be around anyone.
Nope.
Period. She's a terrible person.
She really is.
Yeah, these people are nasty. Palate cleanser.
Palate cleanser?
What's a palate cleanser?
We're about to get some money from Joe Biden.
Fingers crossed.
And if you were at the Capitol last week, turn yourself in. Because they're going to come and get you.
They're going to find you.
They're watching you right now. And they're waiting out the window. So just rap, tap, tap. Say, hey, I'm coming out peacefully. And everything will be okay.
Good advice. Good sound advice. But yeah, that was Carla and Paul.
Ken and Barbie.
Ken and Barbie. Punchable faces.
Smashable faces.
Oh, the voices too. Just terrible. She kind of talks like this.
Oh.
Which makes, again, just punch in the punch right in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he's all thug and shit.
He was a rapper. He's trying to rap for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was our episode this week. Do we have any business to attend to?
We have gotten the verdict in, and you guys want Kemper. So we're going to do Kemper.
It's going to be a big undertaking for sure.
It's going to be a two-parter.
He is just fascinating and definitely excited to delve into that.
Unwrap that mountain of a man.
He's a mountain of a man, all right.
Yeah, he is.
Big scary dude.
Yeah, but you know, I still want to have a beer with him.
Right. Kind of a gentle giant, only he, you know, had sex with his mother's head.
Not so gentle.
He has his moments.
He does.
Anyway, so we'll be back next week with a new episode.
The Co-Ed Killer.
The Co-Ed Killer.
Part one.
Dun, dun, dun.
Y'all stay safe out there.
Bye, guys.
Deadly Serial is only possible by listeners like you. Please support us by downloading the Anchor app or going to anchor.fm. You can follow us on social media. Thank you.